in the light or death group of NA in the capital area of NA.
I'm an addict named Rob, and I was sitting up at the lodge, I guess it is, and about a half hour ago, and they said the speaker didn't show up and asked me if I wanted to share. So I'm kind of freaking out, and so I asked them if they could put McKinley first, and like McKinley talked about God showing up, and I was real nervous, and I was like, just like you, I was like, what am I going to say, and like, I live on 3rd Street in Harrisburg, and I've taken an H&I meeting probably into that 90-day treatment center for about 3 years now. And I know all the places he was talking about, you know what I mean? So I know that I'm where I'm supposed to be, right? So I'm thinking on the walk down here before all that, I'm like, well, carry the message, not the addict. And immediately I start thinking about all these knuckleheads, right? All these other people. Men that I sponsor and people that are in my life and people that I, you know, that we watch come in and bump their heads a bunch of times, but, and we get so frustrated because I know for me that once I got just a little bit of freedom, I became passionate about the program Narcotics Anonymous. And when I am asked to share my experience, strength, and hope, like, I want to convince everybody, you know what I mean, that it's possible. Because it wasn't possible for me. I used for 27 years. I knew I had acceptance that I was going to die smoking crack. I got clean in South Florida. My biggest aspirations before I got clean was to make it to Key West because I could panhandle tourists down there. That was it. Just another couple hours south, and I'd be good. It never got cold. I'd be good. I'm originally from this area. My addiction started here and chased me to Florida, or I chased it, more likely. I relocated back to the Harrisburg area about 5 years ago from Florida, and I'm happy to be here. I'd like to thank, you know, Mike asked me to come out. I saw Mike last month. I was in Johnstown visiting my mom, and I ran into Mike, and I was here last year, and I love this atmosphere. You know, this, we're junkies. We don't get it, stuff like this. We don't get to come and hang out with each other at a beautiful campground in the lower mountains. When I was using, I couldn't leave a two-block area. I couldn't. I just couldn't. So at any rate, the message is hope, right? I knew that I was going to die smoking crack. I was convinced, and I had full-on acceptance of that. And I knew from my history that I was going to walk over anyone that came in my path. And it was the guilt and shame that kept me using for so long. You know, the guilt of calling myself a father but not being one. Calling myself a husband but not being one. Of just being a complete, in my mind, piece of shit all the time. And once that ball starts rolling with me, it doesn't stop. And I don't stop, I get stopped. And so I've been blessed. I've been blessed with freedom. And the freedom wasn't free, and I didn't come in here and just show up at meetings and all of a sudden be okay. I was for a little bit, you know, and then I'd relapse. And then I'd come back and I'd apply a little bit more of what they told me to apply, and I'd get a little bit more freedom, and then I'd relapse. But my experience is once you get a little bit of taste in Narcotics Anonymous, it really fucks your ability to get high up. Like, I just couldn't get high anymore. I could get angry, I could get rageful, I could get resentful. I couldn't get high. The escape had become the trap. And so, for every time I would relapse, I would get back, and I would get back with this desperation and this sense of urgency, and I would run to my sponsor, because when I first got involved in this process, I got a sponsor who never, the one thing he said from the first day was, "You'll never see my back." Right? And he would stick with me through relapses, and there were times I would call him on my way to COP, and I would still go COP, and because a friend of mine used to say there's two things you can't stop. You can't stop an addict who wants to stay clean, and you can't stop an addict who wants to use. and I know that because I've been both of those addicts, right? And so I would get here and I would have this urgency and I'd be like, man, I got to do this step work and I got to do what you tell me to do. And I was desperate, and he would say, take it easy, bro. It doesn't happen in one day. You got to be patient. But like, we're instant gratification people. I need to know how it's going to work and when it's going to feel different and what's going to happen. You just got to tell me what's going to happen. And, you know, someone explained to me one time that you can't tell a blind person that's been blind their whole life what grass looks like. We can't explain to people through carrying the message of Narcotics Anonymous what it's going to feel like. Because it's something that a hopeless, helpless, desperate addict has probably never experienced. I've never experienced being okay with myself, right? Nothing to do with drugs. I've never experienced not walking into a room full of people before I got here and not feeling different than everybody. And I wasn't always worse. I was sometimes better. But it was never, ever the same, right? I never thought that anyone could possibly feel like I felt, could possibly have been affected the way I was affected by the things I had gone through. And until I got here. And so, I always lose my train of thought, but I'll catch it 5 minutes from now, and I'll be like, oh! That's how I am. So that sponsor stuck with me, and he never showed me his back, and the only reason I ever had to look for new sponsors when I relocated to Pennsylvania, and that guy's still in my life. He's a short little Cuban guy, and he showed me how to express my feelings and how to get close to another man, and now my most recent sponsor has a lot of the same qualities that first guy had. You know, I'm a literature guy, I'm a tradition guy, I'm a service guy. My sponsor today shares all the time that service is the rent we pay for life. So when Narcotics Anonymous asked me to do something, who the fuck am I to say no? You know, because I'd be dead on a beach in Key West if it was up to me. And so when he asked me with no warning on a topic that I wasn't really comfortable sharing on, I can't say no, man. To a fellowship that saves and changes people's lives on a daily basis. And so what can we do? What can I do? I don't know what you guys can do, but what can I do to carry the message that there's hope and that you don't have to die and that you can feel different and you can feel better? And how do I tell the blind guy what grass looks like, right? Only by the way that it was shown to me. Because that pragmatic approach that I took to recovery, that I had to know the solution, and I had to know why, and I had to know how, and I had to know how long, it didn't work for me. And so he said, if you want what I got, you got to do what I did. And slowly you'll feel different. And you're not always going to feel better because it's not going to be comfortable. Because see, I didn't know how to be honest when I got here, so honesty was uncomfortable. And I didn't know how to be open when I got here because it seemed like every time I opened myself in active addiction, I set myself up and I got burned. So I couldn't trust anybody and I couldn't believe anybody. And nobody was really clear. Like, really? Clean? Complete? Not completely clean. Now, you may have been able to put down crack. Or you might be able to stop putting a needle in your arm, but clean. Like nothing? Get the fuck out of here. Who lives like that? And so at some point, like my last clean day, I got involved in Narcotics Anonymous in 2004. My last clean day is 2008. And I had a year a couple times. And the last time I used was the day before I got 18 months. Right? And this is when I started to learn how little the disease of addiction has to do with drugs. Right? And how much it has to do with my inability to live without drugs. Because I had drugs, I'm cool. My problem wasn't using, my problem was running out. My problem was that guilt and that shame that I couldn't hide anymore when I ran out of drugs. My problem was me. My problem was my inability to make good decisions on any level. And my bottom didn't come when I put down crack for the last time or any drugs for the last time. My bottom came a year into recovery, and I felt like I was letting my kids down again, clean. And this whole recovery process wasn't what it was cracked up to be, and it wasn't happening fast enough, and I was still the biggest piece of shit in the world. And fuck this. And Narcotics Anonymous messed my ability to get high up, so I didn't have that anymore either. And I was mad. Right? And so I walked into, I was in the process with over a year clean of moving to Harrisburg, right? And I had to leave my kids, and I was going through a divorce, and I didn't have a job, and I was fucked up, and the only thing I didn't do was use. Like, I lied about everything, I let everybody down, I let myself down most of all, because we harmed a lot of people, but most of all we harmed ourselves. Like, and I drove from Florida wanting nothing more than to drive into every bridge that I passed, because all I wanted was to be dead, because everything I learned through my whole life to cope was gone, right? And the one thing that gave me hope, like, I turned my back on. I want to say that all these to the Narcotics Anonymous, the people in Narcotics Anonymous in the area I was in were fucked up, but really it was just me that was closed-minded. And most of those people that I thought were turning their back on me were really trying to help me, like McKinney was talking about. But I didn't want to hear it, right? So I walk into a meeting downtown Harrisburg, and it was a lunchtime meeting, and it was November, and I had just got here from South Florida, and it was only like 50 degrees, and I thought I was going to fucking die because I was just so cold. So I was in Florida for like 8 years, and I walked into this meeting, and I was the only white guy in there, and I puked all over the meeting, and I felt like I was sticking out like a hard, you know what, and these people loved on me, right, and this guy, when Joey started calling me, because I threw up, man. I'm like, NA sucks, and I'm going to use, and fuck you guys, and you got the fellowship let me down, and all this crap, right? And I'm just here because I don't have anywhere else to go. And I'm here because God put me there, number one, but these guys started calling me, and one in particular called me every day, and for like a month, I didn't answer the phone. And he kept calling. And he kept calling. And I kept going to meetings because here's a little bit of the backstory. It's like I was going through a divorce. And I had used so many times in that marriage that I was constantly being accused of using. Imagine that. Right? And so I wanted to use real bad because I thought if I used one more time that I would get the courage to kill myself. And like all those other times that I used wanting to kill myself, I never got the courage then. But this time it was going to be different. Right? But I couldn't allow the bitch to be right. Right? Like I didn't want to die dirty and her find out that I used. I just wanted to die, but I know that I'm getting way off track, but I want to talk about like the point I'm trying to make is that the program in Narcotics Anonymous, in and of itself, and the step process, and the fellowship process that picked me up and saved my life when I wasn't willing to be picked up, and they wouldn't let me go, and they kept calling. And Narcotics Anonymous, in the city of Harrisburg, is right in the middle of the hood. A lot of it, right? So I would drive through the hood thinking about copping and some fucking addict in recovery would see me like, hey, you're here for the meeting? And I'm like, yeah. Talk about God showing up, right? Talk about the hope and the spiritual process, because it's the spiritual process that sometimes I had absolutely nothing to do with. Right? I came here with the resentment for God that a lot of us have, and anti-religion and anti-God, and I knew at some point you were going to try and ram God down my throat, and I was just waiting, because when you did, that was my ticket out the door, and all this shit, right? And you're not going to be able to swear, and you're going to have to do it this way, and I'm going to tell you what to do. And everybody said, we don't tell each other what to do. We tell each other what works for us. Right? I'm like, fuck. And so Blacksmith's response, he said, if you want what I get, he was real mellow and the most serene motherfucking, I was angry and I wasn't peaceful, I had no peace in me, right? And he was like, just relax, bro. I can't relax. Like a month ago, I wanted to chop my hands off. There's no relaxing. I need relief from the pain because you took my coping mechanism away and I need relief. And he said, well, get a dictionary. I'm like, what the fuck is, get a dictionary. I said I need help, man. I don't need to define words. And he made me define words like fellowship and God and service and selfless and disease and addiction. Right? And I ended up with like 4 pages of words. And he said, when you're looking in the dictionary, a definition will jump out at you. Because there'll be like 4 definitions, and one of them will look like it has a light shined on it. Right? And he said, dumb it down, and I don't really consider myself to be real smart, so that wasn't hard for me. But he said, do simple words like God, because your understanding of God is obviously, your perspective is off. Right? And so I changed my perspective with a dictionary. And I had to read up to the first step, right? This is him carrying the message to me. Because I could switch this up at a heartbeat and get myself involved in it in my will and talk about a bunch of other people, right? I'm talking about how the message was carried to me when I was nothing but a mess. And all I was looking for was an excuse to leave after using for 27 years and destroying everything multiple times. And I wasn't, and he said, I read the first step. I'm powerless, right? It was obvious to me when I got here that I was powerless because I smoked my whole life. Like the house, the boat, the marriage, the family, the company, everything I ever had went away. And I knew that that was just a result of the drug. But then when I finally did define, like they say, before recovery comes discovery, we have to discover that our disease is about more than drugs. Way more than drugs. Right? Because now I've been here for a couple days, and I'm still fucked up on a regular basis. And I got some ability to deal with it, and the highs aren't as high, and the lows aren't as low, and I don't want to drive into bridges anymore, and I'm pretty peaceful, and I'm a pretty responsible, usually responsible, productive member of society, and most of the time I pay my bills, and sometimes I answer my phone, and I usually show up when I deem it necessary, right? And I'm still egotistical, and I'm still all this crap, right, that I discovered in some later steps. But, like, I had to understand before I could apply a first step and understand powerlessness and understand unmanageability that it wasn't about a drug. Because the drug was gone, right? And I was still feeling like, I just get checking out, please. And so I had to understand that it was my way of thinking. That inner unmanageability that says I have unhealthy and untrue beliefs about myself. Right? Beliefs. Those beliefs, like, aren't negotiable. If I believe it, that's just what it is. And if I believe that I'm a piece of shit, then I'm a piece of shit. And so when we get here and we start to clean up a little bit and we look for that validation from other people, that is the opposite sex, or somebody to say, hey, that's good. You're doing the right thing. You're going to be okay. Like, fuck, thank God. They told me I'm going to be okay, so I must be okay. Right? This must be what okay feels like. And then when I get alone, okay doesn't feel so okay anymore without the validation of somebody else. Right? But when I open my mind to a loving and caring and a forgiving and a non-judgmental and a non-grudge-holding God, and a non-condemning God, that I have no idea what it is, right? He said, a God we must understand, a God we must put a face to. You're my face to God. As a recovering addict, you're my face to God, because that's what God, the skies don't open up, and I don't hear God in a church unless it's in the basement and in our Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I'm not knocking religion, I'm just talking about me. God speaks to me through human beings because he knows that's what I'm going to hear. And so when I opened myself up to that, I had the courage to figure out what it is about myself that made me feel like a giant piece of shit. And when I did that, I didn't feel like quite as much of a piece of shit anymore. And when I shared that with somebody else, they made me feel and understand that I wasn't as unique as I thought I was, because they thought a lot of the same stuff, right? And I learned as much in the first and fifth step good about myself as I did bad, right? Because we'll minimize either the good or the bad, and we'll blow up either the good or the bad depending on what situation I'm in, right? But my perception is usually not based in reality. So we surround ourselves with people, and we surround ourselves with this process, and we work the steps in order, and we get freedom. We get the promise that's given to us when we get here. We get freedom from the disease of addiction that can be active in our life with or without a drug. Right? And so when I remember the first time a man asked me to sponsor him, and I ran to my sponsor and I said, I can't. I don't know how to do that. Right? Because I had learned to, by that point, when I got uncomfortable, to seek another perspective. And I said, I don't know how to do that, right? I can't sponsor people. I've never done that before. And like when I went to him, I was expecting the validation of him telling me that I was humble. And he said, that's egotistical. I'm like, fuck you, man. Am I ever going to understand this stuff? And I said, come on, Louie. I thought that was being humble. And he said, well, who are you to question what God puts in your life? Because what I've learned through the process is that we get just as much from sponsoring them as we do from getting sponsored by them. Right? And I learned just as much. And the more men that I welcome into my life to walk through this step process, the more it keeps me involved in uncovering myself. Right? And walking through the steps for myself. So I'm still competitive and I'm still egotistical. And on some level, I still can't let you get ahead of me. Right? So if you're coming up to share this stuff with me, I'd better brush up on mine. You know what I mean? That's how it works for me. And maybe there's some defect in there, but like I don't want to use anymore. And I don't want to hurt people anymore. And I don't want to steal anymore. Every relapse I ever had didn't start with using, it started with lying. Every time. I'm not suggesting that I tell the truth all the time. But I know that I try. And I realized that I'm not really smart enough to pull off all the lies that I used to be able to think I pulled off. You know what I mean? Like, because I'll fuck it up. I'll tell you one thing, and then 10 minutes later, I'll contradict myself. So life is just easier when I tell the truth. And I don't always take the easy route. And so the message of Narcotics Anonymous that any addict can stop using and lose the desire to use, I think, you know, if it was R.A. and not N.A., if it was Rob Anonymous, it would say that we lose the desire to use by finding a new way to live. Because it's not until I can learn to live life without the use of drugs, without a coping mechanism, without a desire to run away from responsibility, that I can fully lose the desire, right? I can will being clean. I can will being abstinent for a minute. I can go to jail. I've walked into jail and left fully, okay, I don't have to fight that battle today. I'm free for a minute. Walking into a jail cell. So, I just want to say that to carry the message, I can only give what was given to me. And I can't force anything on anybody. Because, you know, people tried to force it on me when I got here, and they pushed me farther and farther and farther and farther into active addiction and farther into hopelessness and helplessness. And I shared once on the 11th edition, and I found this bulletin that World put out about our public relations policy and the traditions, and it talks about, like, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, but a lot of times in our daily life, the addict who still suffers isn't in the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, right? So do I have a responsibility to share the message with the sick and suffering addict that there's a better way to live, and then stop and leave it the fuck alone right there? Right? Do I have the willpower to have compassion and empathy for somebody and tell them that there's a better way to live and they don't have to feel that way anymore, and then let them process that? Or do I have to try and force my opinion on people? Because I do both. I go into these, I've been involved in H&I as long as I've been clean. Like, if I had the clean time requirement, I was involved. And I go into these treatment centers and I can't shut up sometimes. Because I just want them to understand. But I sat in treatment, I went to treatment one time, he was right after, and I went to treatment one time and I sat there for 3/4 of the time, just flying under the radar, thinking I can't wait to get out. Right? And then that last couple, a week or 2.5 weeks or something, I'm like, well, maybe there is some freedom in this. But up until then, I was just doing what I was supposed to do to get by and not get fucked with. So if someone's not ready to hear the message, it doesn't matter how many times I beat my head against that tree, it's probably not going to fall down. So the ability and the responsibility to carry the message in Narcotics Anonymous and then just wait and let God do His work. Because I didn't get here with the desire to stay clean. I didn't get here with the only requirement. I got here because my wife said you could still see your kids if you went to rehab. Alright? Okay. Cool. That in the van I'm living in. If you're new, and it's weird, and it's freaky, and it's cultish, it is, a little bit. It's better than using, right? It's better than the hopeless, helpless desperation of wanting to drive your truck into a bridge clean. It's better than wanting to die. Like, it's better than jails, institutions, and death, right? The reality is that people die. Because we get here, and we bounce in and out. Like, I bounced in and out, and I thought, okay, I can go there when it gets out of control, and I can get clean. But the reality is it kills motherfuckers. Every day. Right? And I don't know when the next one that's going to explode my heart's going to be. Right? And I don't know when the next relationship that I get in is going to want to make me use. And so we practice these principles when times are good so that they become habitual for when times get bad. Because I don't talk about spiritual principles when she leaves. I don't talk about spiritual principles when I'm getting evicted clean or when I'm jobless clean and I don't have any money in my pocket. I'm not real spiritual at that time. But if I practice the stuff and I continue to work steps when times are good, then it just becomes the way I live my life. And when we apply these principles to all of our affairs, we get freedom not from drugs, but from the disease of addiction. Because the disease of addiction will manifest itself in every area of my life. Just yesterday, wanted to assault my boss. Really bad. Right? Told him a month ago I was going to a spiritual retreat. Reminded him on Monday. Reminded him again on Thursday. Needed to leave by 12. Worked till 4:30. Pissed the fuck off, right? Went through all the different scenarios of what I was going to say to him, right? When he got there. And if he said this, then I was going to do this. Disease thinking, right? And then I get to the meeting last night, read the Just for Today, and it talks about decisions and actions and consequences. See, I made the decision that I was going to fuck him up. Right? But the principles kicked in before I was allowed to put the action into play. Right? And therefore, I still have a job to get to on Monday. Right? And I made it here anyway. Right? I didn't come last night like I planned on doing. I'm here. And I love it. And I'm free. Just for today from the disease. Just for 5 minutes. Maybe. Because I don't know what's going to happen. You know, the message is that we stay in the moment, and really the moment's not that bad. It's when I lived in yesterday with all the gain, the shame and the guilt and the crap that I created, or when I live in tomorrow with the anxiety and the fear of what could happen, possibly, maybe,
idiot,
I'm ignoring the gift of that I'm experiencing right now, and that's the gift of like being free from myself, right? And being able to carry the message to somebody else that you too, any addict, can find a new way to live and lose desire. RA again, I reverse it. Find a new way to live and you'll lose the desire. But to do what we do, you gotta, to get what we got, you gotta do what we did. And I still don't know what that is, so I still call my sponsor on a regular basis. And the steps are in order for a reason, except for when it comes to 12, then we go back to 1. We're not like other fellowships that work through 12 steps and then put the book up. Right? When I get to 12, I go back to 1. And I peel another layer off, and I become a little bit more comfortable with me. As right now, and if they say that the process is endless, and that I can continue to experience new levels of freedom, and new levels of faith, and a better relationship with the God of my understanding, and become a better human being, like, I'm so much better than I ever expected to be, and I'm the blind guy that knows what grass looks like, and what freedom really, truly feels like, and it's not all the stuff. That's freedom to fucking just be okay. One more thing, and I'll shut up. Like, I recently in June, in the beginning of June, I celebrated 5 years clean, right? And I know there's some predecessors here, but to me that's a fucking long time, right? But the hope that I'm here to share with you is that, just like most of us, I destroyed a lot of stuff in my active addiction, right? And and my family came to my home group to hear me celebrate my 5 years. I'm talking about the people that disowned me and said, no more. Like, no more. We're done with you. You're not our son anymore. He came from Johnstown to Harrisburg on a Sunday night to come to my home group. His sister came and her husband came. People are no longer embarrassed of me. They showed the fuck up. My ex-wife was here from Florida and she came and she brought my children. Right? And we're friends now. We have a fantastic relationship. All those things that were irreparable. They were never going to, these things, this area might be okay in my life, maybe, somehow, if I do what you tell me, but these things over here will never be okay. I fucked them up so bad they'll never be okay. Well, guess what? I stopped trying to make them okay, and I allowed the process in Narcotics Anonymous to work, and even that shit's okay. It's not only okay, like, it's fucking good. Thanks for what you said.
My life.